I'm Frank Vaughn. It's March 18th, 2025, also known as Groundhog Day, where I get in front of the camera yet again and with new material, explain the exact same story I've been explaining all this time, seemingly for years. Without further ado, let's have another history lesson. So I was sitting here early this morning drinking my coffee and remembering history, remembering decades worth of history. There's all these data points that just bounce around in my head, and I just wonder how many people can recall historical events and know, based on just what's in here, that there's video that they need to go and find to compile those things, and then there's such a dearth of information that you have to pick and choose which ones you include. Anyway, let's just watch some history. This is Nixon, Brezhnev. Everybody's clapping. Everybody's cordial. Joking around. Now they got to pick up the ceremonial champagne. They're going to have a little sip to commemorate the friendliness between the two peoples. But Brezhnev's going to keep an eye on Nixon. He's not going to drink his until Nixon drinks his. And now we need to go to some classic Clinton. For those of you who don't remember Boris Yeltsin, he was the leader coming out of the Soviet collapse. And he headed one of the most corrupt governments that's ever graced the Russian Federation. A lot of the communist officials that led directly to the Soviet downfall bought up public resources and privatized them for a song. And if Putin hadn't done some of the things that he did, well, Russia wouldn't be what it is today. Now, you can argue that there's Russian oligarchs and that they run everything, and that's fine. But what makes Russian oligarchs particularly bad compared to European oligarchs, the Klaus Schwabs and the Alexander Soroses, European-American, or the Elon Musks, or, I mean, take your pick. There are billionaires out there who are trying to advance their interests. What makes Russian billionaires uniquely bad? I don't know, but let's watch.
That the press reports, one could see that what you were writing was that today's meeting with President Bill Clinton was going to be a disaster.
Так вот, не первый раз я вам говорю, что вы провалились.
Well, now for the first time I can tell you that you're a disaster.
Be sure you get the right attribution there.
Я надеюсь, что
he might be a dirty pervert and rapist, but he does have an infectious laugh. You have to give him that. Look at them getting along. Glad handy. Oh, a bit of a hug. Aren't we all just super friendly? And I don't think it's fair to bring up Bill Clinton without bringing up his wife and the Great Reset. And the Uranium One deal, which saw at the time 20% of U.S. uranium production become the property of a Russian company. Now, here's something that's interesting. The war started in February of 2022. Biden was in office. The Biden government was fully ensconced doing their thing. Do you think they altered the status of Uranium One in the United States? Do you realize that the Russians still hold many of those mining claims to this day? Nobody did anything about it. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they might not want to target the Democrat legacy?
In anticipation of this important meeting and our time here together, I wanted to present you with a little gift which represents what President Obama and Vice President Biden and I have been saying, and that is we want to reset our relationship.
And let's do it together.
So we will do it together.
Okay? Note it's a red button. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's
Thank
so
you
happy.
Very much.
You are
Thank
very
you.
Welcome. We worked hard to get the right Russian word. Do you think we got it?
You get it wrong.
I got it wrong.
It should be перезагрузка. And this says перегрузка, which means overcharged.
Well, we won't let you do that to us, I promise.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Very kind of you. It would be on my desk.
I wonder if it's still on his desk. How many times do you think Obama and Putin met? It was more than once. And it wasn't just this. Look how happy they are. Look how friendly. Everybody's getting along. But Frank, the Russians invaded Ukraine for no reason. They had no pretext, even though I've put paid to the entire idea that there was no pretext. During this time, you had the Chechen rebellion. You had various operations in the Georgian Republic. Didn't seem to bother anybody back then. It didn't seem to bother the West when they walked into Libya and killed the leader and destroyed the government and re-enabled open-air slave markets and destroyed the most developed nation in Africa. Didn't seem to bother anybody when they went into Iraq in 2003 with absolutely no justification whatsoever. They tried to use the pretext of 9/11 and security. Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. He spent a decade or longer. Now, there's something. I can't remember off the top of my head the length of the Iraq-Iranian war. But during that time, Hussein was backed by the U.S. government to fight the Iranians, who were far more linked to al-Qaeda and to ISIS than Saddam Hussein was. There was no justification for the 2003 war, but in they went to another sovereign nation, and we can go up and down a list. Why is it okay when Americans do it, but it's not okay when the Russians do it, especially when the Russian pretext is much better? They're people. They're brothers and sisters. Russian-speaking, culturally Russian people being eliminated, being exterminated, having their language destroyed, having their churches attacked for a decade by the regime in Kiev. And they weren't allowed to go in and try and stop the killing? Where does the West get this moral superiority from? It's laughable. And whose border expanded the most since 1990? Was it NATO, who has doubled the territory under their umbrella and are well away from the North Atlantic in the modern day? I mean, what is Turkey doing in NATO other than undermining the entire farce that NATO actually is? The Americans are once again the only people who can see the future. NATO's outlived its usefulness. It's literally trying to kill the world right now by not wanting to end the war in Ukraine, which it helped create by encouraging the Kiev regime to not implement the Minsk Accords, to not implement those agreements, encouraging the regime in Kiev to not sign peace. When the Russians had largely overwhelmed the Ukrainian army in the early days of the war, advancing rapidly, there was a deal on the table. The Russian forces pulled out because they thought they were about to get a deal. And instead, Kiev reneged on their word at the encouragement of the West. And probably a million people have died since. And somehow we're supposed to believe that Trump is the bad guy. Like, I said this morning on Twitter. The people who oppose peace in Ukraine, including Pierre Poilievre, Mark Carney, all elements of our Canadian government, it seems every single level of government wants to symbolize and signal that they stand united with Ukraine no matter what, they're all advocating for their own megadeth. They're all advocating for the end of civilization. To go to direct war, to send NATO troops over there, to do these foolish things, means the end of the world. And for what? Because the Russians invaded to stop the killing that was going on? This is history. This is reality. This is what happened. I think the thing that disgusts me the most about everything that I have to do in front of this camera is that I am constantly running up against narratives, and you provide facts. You put paid to it. You give the receipts. You show people how their world is. You show people how the country's run. And their answer to you is, nuh-uh. Speaking of, I want to talk about a plague that is actually a topic of conversation right now on X. The headline is Grok AI under fire echoes internet misinformation. Recent social media activity has sparked a debate over the reliability of Grok 3, an AI developed by XAI after it named Elon Musk as the biggest spreader of disinformation on the platform X. Critics argue that Grok's responses reflect the information it is fed without necessarily verifying facts. Don't outsource. I'm actually just going to read the tweet I made last night. Do not trust AI, period, people. It is a tool. The tool will do whatever you want it to. The hand guides the tool. You must use it without bias, or if you input bias, you must verify its outputs yourself. It's a powerful tool, but it's just a tool. Stop treating it like the arbiter of truth. And the edit that I, the really important advice I wanted to give people is, don't give it binary questions. Yes or no questions, don't feed it yes or no questions. Always ask it detailed questions, and then question the answer. AI will do whatever you tell it to. You can make it compile an argument in favor of Trump being the greatest president the world has ever seen, and you can make it compile a list of reasons why Trump is the worst president ever seen. It will do whatever you want. It's an empowered search function. That's all it is. You, the human, still have to verify it. First off, don't accept any AI. ChatGPT, Claude AI, anything should ever be a replacement for your own reason. And secondly, and more concerningly for me, is that there are people out there who think that's where AI needs to go. That AI should be the arbiter of truth. That's wacko. That is beyond dangerous. The human has always got to have final say. We cannot outsource decision-making to artificial intelligence. It will mislead us, and I don't care how clever it gets. Because so often in this world, right and wrong are not binaries. They're gray zones. And what is true in one moment is no longer true in the next moment. Because the story changes. Just like the moment, the only constant is change. I really think if you're one of these people, you should stop. Don't go to AI and then just copy pasta whatever you find. That's terrible. You're outsourcing your own mental processes. And secondly, and more concerningly, do not think that the goal of AI is to replace human judgment in the equation. That's such a dangerous philosophy. I should have probably put this at the beginning of the video, but we're here now. This is one of the most important things that you're not going to hear from the mainstream media. Let's just listen.
One of the things you told me about is what you call magic money computers at the Treasury. Tell us about it, because I never heard of that until you brought that up.
Okay, so you may think that the government computers all talk to each other, they synchronize, they add up what funds are going somewhere, and it's... it's coherent. That the numbers, for example, that you're presented as a senator, are actually the real numbers.
One would think.
No, yeah. They're not.
Yeah.
Okay. they're not totally wrong, but they're probably off by 5% or 10% in some cases. I call a magic money computer any computer which can just make money out of thin air. That's magic money.
So how does that work?
It just issues payments.
And you said there's something like 11 of these computers at Treasury that are sending out trillions in payments?
They're mostly at Treasury. Some are with this, some at HHS, some at, there's one, one or two at State, there's some at DOD. I think we found now 14 magic money computers.
Okay, so just to further define what it is, when you send money, say you send an e-transfer or you do any kind of transaction on an exchange, there is verification of sender and there's verification of receiver, there's a receipt printed, and there's accounting. What he's talking about are computers that can issue payments without any verification of sender or receiver. They can just print money out of thin air. These computers are independent of the Federal Reserve, which just prints money out of nothing anyway. These discoveries that Doge is making they should be earth-shattering, and Canadians should be applauding it, for one thing, and secondly, should be demanding the same thing out of our government, considering our ballooning national debt, considering all the corruption I've highlighted and proven and demonstrated on this channel. You would think there'd be a movement in Canada for accounting of our government, for an audit, like what's happening in the United States. Instead, we're burning Tesla dealerships. We're targeting poor people who just happen to buy Tesla cars before any of this happened. Remember when Elon Musk was a hero? Remember when there was subsidies? Remember when this guy was celebrated as a bastion of the left? What did he do wrong? He started telling the truth. He supported the quote-unquote wrong president, and now he's revealing the massive scale of fraud in the U.S. government, and the mainstream media is not telling you about it. No, this is your mainstream media. Leaked memo: Doge plots to cut Social Security phone support. So the headline is long enough that when it is shortened by aggregators, all you see is Doge plots to cut Social Security. You have to go to the article to see that it's about phone support. And they're talking about cutting phone support for ID verification or ID changes or change of address services in certain limited functions because of the potential for fraud. That's actually what's happening. And I just, as a side note, I wanted to talk about voter ID laws. The United States is probably one of the only places in the world where voter ID is contentious. Canada, one of the most progressive hellholes on the entire face of the planet, has very stringent, yet easily complied with voter ID laws. You have to have two pieces of ID verification, and there's 30-odd sources, or it's either 30 or 50-odd sources. Proof of residence, it's not just photo ID. In America, there's this concept, and note with this map that it's really only blue states that have a problem with only American citizens voting. Everybody has a driver's license. Everybody has, in Canada, we all have social insurance numbers. Everybody has ID. Their argument is that minorities, and this is the left's argument, that minorities are too stupid to have ID, that it's too hard, it's too laborious. It's obvious that the only reason they want to make it hard to have voter ID is so that you can have fraud. And that's really what Elon Musk is doing, is he's threatening the fraud machine, because the entire U.S. government has become just, there's millions of people on the take. There's millions of people at the trough. They're just cash and checks they shouldn't get. They're benefiting from programs that in some cases don't even exist. There's contractors whose contracts expired years ago, but they're still getting paid on an annual basis, and they're just cashing the checks. And maybe they're paying the IRS and keeping the IRS off their back, but the American taxpayer is getting ripped off. Now look, Emily Peck, this is really funny. This is an example of your mainstream media reporter. Emily Peck works at Axios, and her whole Twitter feed isn't reporting. She is trying to craft a narrative. She's begging for people to speak out. She's talking about U.S. consumer sentiment. Everything comes back to trying to demonize the Trump administration. She's not telling you about the magic money printers. She's not telling you about the millions of people over the age of 120 that are still registered in the Social Security system. She's not telling you about all of the different programs that the U.S. government was funding overseas for the most absurd things like condoms in Nigeria and other absurdities. She's not telling you about how they're getting rid of that. She's worried about the fact that they might cancel phone support in certain circumstances, because they're crafting an anti-American narrative. They're not about telling you the truth. And your mainstream media is doing that. CBC, CTV, right here in Canada, right here at home. They craft narrative. They don't report. This is from MSN, and they're citing the Daily Beast. Opinion. That opinion word allows mainstream media to get away with journalistic murder. Just slap the word opinion on it and put it in your newspaper or put it on your publication, and all of a sudden everything that is said in it, you have it's like having a caveat when somebody makes a video and tells you to buy some crypto. At the beginning of the video, they're like, this is not financial advice. That's how they get out of it. And then they proceed to give you all the advice in the world that gets you wrecked. But they put that disclaimer in there, so it's all good. This opinion is just a disclaimer. Every time you see the word opinion in mainstream media, it's a disclaimer. MAGA OG Nick Fuentes takes a surprising left turn as a Trump truther. How? After everything that they've done to attack Nick Fuentes, for good reason. I'm not trying to support Nick Fuentes here. He does his own thing. Whatever. After everything they've done, he says something negative about Donald Trump, and MSN is willing to put him on the front page and willing to give an opinion piece that paints him as an awakening right-winger. Can you imagine if he actually continued down the road and became an anti-Trumper? They would probably start promoting him and forget everything that they ever said about him bad, just like they forgot everything good they said about Elon Musk in light of recent history, in light of him exposing fraud and doing what he's doing. You guys, the guy is demeaned and targeted, not just in the United States, but by the entire Canadian government. What does Elon Musk have to do with the trade dispute with the United States? What does he have to do with our money laundering and drug problem, our foreign interference problem here in Canada? Nothing. He's not part of the Trump cabinet. He's a special employee that's not making any money. And by the way, Musk isn't making money out of this. Donald Trump isn't making money out of this. Both men have lost a lot of money doing what they're doing. The only saving grace with Elon Musk is that he's got SpaceX. And the U.S. government, NASA, the bureaucracy, the military are dependent on SpaceX to get their stuff in space and to rescue astronauts, which just happened. For all of you flat earthers who insist it's flat, I would encourage you to watch the 3 or 4 hour uninterrupted live stream of the space station and explain to me how you can do that with ropes and pulleys. You're stupid. You're just, flat earthers are the stupidest people. Please go ahead and unsubscribe and get out of my life, because I haven't done that for a while and I just want to make sure that it's understood. Flat earthers are the dumbest people on earth. Please unsubscribe and go away. This is actually breaking news right now. I'm going to be reacting to this live. How special for you. Putin agrees to halt in attacks on Ukraine's energy facilities, but will it really take shape? According to the emerging call readouts, Putin and Trump held detailed and frank talks on Ukraine. Both are characterized that the call went very well. Lasted about 90 minutes. White House, the leaders agreed that the movement to peace will begin with an energy and infrastructure ceasefire. Kremlin, Putin supports idea not to hit energy facilities for a period of 30 days. Putin and Trump agreed to stay in contact, which is a really good thing. Putin and Trump discussed Ukraine, economic ties. White House, the leaders agreed that the movement to peace will begin with an energy and infrastructure ceasefire, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody who prays should be praying for peace in Ukraine. Everybody who doesn't pray should be hoping for peace in Ukraine. There's going to be a dearth, I imagine, of commentary and content that comes out in the wake of this, which is making fun of Putin or making fun of Trump or talking about how Trump is just a Russian asset and all these other things. The man hung. Let me see if I can just find the picture quickly. I know I clipped it. Let me see if I can just find it super fast. Yeah, right here. This is Trump yesterday. The Declaration of Independence in the Oval Office. I'm a big believer in political symbols. I'm a big believer in nonverbal messages. This is when the United States broke away from kings and broke away from the affairs of Europe. This is a reminder that America was founded not in allegiance with the monarchs, but against them. George Washington himself was offered the keys to the kingdom. He was offered to be king under the Constitution as it was being drafted and in the early days. I'm simplifying the story. And he refused. He served 2 terms and he left and he went back to the farm. Beautiful. George Washington, very much in common with Cincinnatus, for those of you who don't know who Cincinnatus was. During the Roman Republic had a very clever device called the dictatorship. And what it was when the Republic faced a crisis, they would appoint a dictator who would have absolute total authority over every decision, life and death, for a period, I believe it was 1 year, if my memory serves me correctly. And then after that year, the term would expire. And if the dictator didn't lay down the power, well, he'd probably just end up dead. He'd get killed by the senator, he'd get killed by the people. It actually worked. It was very efficient. Cincinnatus was dictator 5 times over the course of a very long life. He lived a long, long time. And the last time he came back, he really didn't want to, but he did. He served, he solved the problem, and he left. Cincinnatus is a model for how to wield executive power. And George Washington was also a model for how to wield executive power. The founders of the American Republic were young minds. Now, admittedly, there were some elderly among them, but a lot of them were in their 20s and 30s. There were very few that were over the age of 40. So there's a certain youthful vigor, a certain passion, that as we age, the light of that passion sometimes diminishes. The vision that those young men had, the wisdom that they had in designing the republic and framing it, is second to none in the world. Hanging the Declaration of Independence on the wall of the Oval Office is a message to the world that America is resurgent, that the globalist, internationalist order of oligarchs from the World Economic Forum and the United Nations who are trying to subvert all of us have been put on notice that America is breaking away and they're going to die trying if they fail. We in Canada should be supporting them in their effort. We shouldn't be looking to Europe for our future. Are you kidding? There's an ocean between us. The Americans are there with capital, willing to buy our stuff. Fortress North America could secure peace and prosperity for my children and yours for the duration of their lives. We have everything we need right here. We have energy, we got oil, we got uranium, we got food. Not only could we be a fortress, we'll still be exporting to the world. We would be rich together if we embraced continentalism. What is Mark Carney promising? As I've said many times on this channel, as Mark Carney said himself during the entire campaign, the pseudo-election of him to be Liberal Party leader, suffering. Dark times ahead, emergencies unending, and an unyielding will to sacrifice you, the resilient, they love that word, Canadian people, to fight their war with Donald Trump and to undermine continentalism, which is so stupid. And I get asked, oftentimes, I get opinion polls thrown at me and people saying that most Canadians are against this, Frank, what's your problem? If most Canadians lined up to jump off a bridge, I'd be happy to just stand there and watch them do it. I'd try to talk them out of it. Believe me, I would. But they'd still go ahead and do it anyway. Most Canadians don't concern me. The thoughts and opinions of the masses don't concern me. They marched along 87% into a medical experiment. The whole mRNA vaccine thing. They did that. The masses. They supported the lockdowns. They supported the vax passports. They supported the crushing of people's rights, not just in the Freedom Convoy, but I mentioned in yesterday's video. Actually, no, it was, I mentioned it 5.5 years ago during the election campaign in October of 2019, the violation of charter rights in High River by Stephen Harper. The Canadians supported that. I'm not concerned about what the masses think. I'm concerned about what's right and trying to convince the masses that they're mentally famished. Pierre Polyev says, Mark Carney says that having a carbon tax in Canada is a requirement for trade overseas. Nonsense. Taxing our energy will simply punish our businesses and ship jobs abroad, just like when Carney supported carbon taxes in Canada while his company invested in American, Australian, and Chinese coal. Only conservatives will axe the tax for everyone, for good, forever. The clarion call of Pierre Polyev is still the carbon tax because he's sold so much, he's banked so much, he's leaned on the carbon tax so much, he can't let it go. And with good reason. Carney didn't end the carbon tax. He signed a symbolic document that was of no real force and effect. The carbon tax is still on the book, and the liberals are running laps. Let me just pull that in here real quick. They're doing things like this. Mark Carney canceled the carbon tax after all this time of them saying the carbon tax was absolutely necessary. The Canadian public, which I'm supposed to bow my head in respect to, when the masses speak through an opinion poll, and you have to really question polls these days, I mean, IQOS is just pure fake news. I'm supposed to believe that the Canadian public, which will go from pro-carbon tax, we need it, to anti-carbon tax, we don't need it, and this is something to celebrate. The Liberal base, which is flocking back to the Liberal Party, whether you believe the numbers or not, there's a real movement in this country back to the Liberal Party. I'm supposed to bow my head to the people who think this way, who are told to snip, snap their public opinions. 1 minute, they were pro-unlimited mass immigration, and it was the worst thing in the world, the most racist thing in the world, to suggest we should lower those numbers. And then Justin Trudeau came out and said, we're going to cancel a bunch of visas and we're going to lower numbers. And I'll give the Liberal base a little bit of credit there, because they collectively paused and scratched their heads because their talking points were so wrecked. But they got over it and they ended up moving along. Another memory that just comes bouncing back into my mind. When we were doing the event in 2019 with Dave Rubin down in Hamilton, and we were all in the van, Bernier, myself, Salim Mansour, Ruben. We were all in this rented van with tinted out windows. And we roll up to the facility, and we have to jump out of the van. And there is this violent, viral mob out front of the facility, and we have to basically break through that line. And there was some police presence there, but there wasn't enough. And anyway, as we're breaking the line, Bernier and his crew run right into the building, and they leave me behind with Salim Mansour. Now, Salim Mansour he's a dark-skinned man, clearly of a minority status. And so as we're going, I had my arm around him on this side, and I had the crowd on my left side, and I stopped as these people are screaming these Nazi slogans at me, and I look them all in the eye, and I said, does this guy look like a white supremacist to you? And I saw them. I saw it hit them. I saw their eyes widen, and they're just like, oh my God, he's a brown dude. What happens to us now? And for a split second, they got it. And then the glaze came back over, and they just started screaming their insults anyway, and they started tokenizing him. People got punched in the head over that. I faced every one of them down and looked in their eyes. I don't bow to the will of the crowd. The crowd gets it wrong all the time. But back to the point. Pierre Poilievre, his disastrous allegiance with Team Canada, allying with them on the trade war with the United States and Donald Trump, playing to the Canadian public's fears as regards the Orange Man, instead of telling them the truth and building public will for the public good, he's playing to their ignorance because he thinks he's got an election coming. And worse, because he thinks he has an election coming, he thinks he can win the election by playing to the left. Never works for conservatives. That's why his numbers are soft AF. One thing, Frank, this is a comment. You mentioned about Carney being unelected. Where in this Constitution Act of 1867 and 1982 does it state that the executive branch has to be elected? I say it in every video. I don't know how this user missed it. Our executive branch is unelected. You elect members of parliament, and then your government is appointed. Mark Carney does not have to face election. He can be propped up as prime minister and never sit in the House of Commons, and it can go on for months and years. I'm not saying it will. I think they want an election. If they think they can win it, they'll call it. But they don't have to. Jagmeet Singh is about to lose his job. He has no incentive to bring the government down. So I didn't say anywhere that our prime ministers have to be elected. They don't. It's just tradition that they should get into an election as soon as they can. Mark Carney actually has some distinct motivations for not going into an election, because he has been able to circumvent the Elections Act, the financial disclosures that would be required. He will have to face that during an election. It's just more incentive for him to delay. Instead of calling an election, and I just want to remind you again that many of your influencers said there would be an election Monday. It's Tuesday. He's still in Europe. This is what's going on. And the CBC will sell Carney to Canadians just like they sold Trudeau. COVID rules, vaccines, Canadians are weak. And I just want to say a bit of a defense for the masses. They've never had anybody just try to educate them, to tell them the difficult truth. What you could see in Sunday's video is I went to these debates. Each debate had hundreds of people there. And I looked them all in the eyes and I delivered the news. I told them the truth. And most of the time, they applauded that truth. The only time I actually got a little bit of booing and pushback was when I said I didn't want to go to a pride parade. They started booing that. And I said the whole line about people having sex objects taped to their body with little kids around. I don't like the sexualization of children. And I started arguing with the crowd. Nobody's used to having pushback. That's how you build a new consensus. You tell the truth. You don't tell people what you think they want to hear. You tell them what is. And that's what we should be doing, because all of our political class in this country is taking us directly to suffering and perdition as part of their promise, part of their campaign platforms. We shouldn't be fighting the Americans. We should be embracing what they're doing in our own country. We should have our own doge. We should be trying to balance our budget. We should be talking about Fortress North America. We should be talking about strengthening us right here and getting out of the conflict in the world. That's what we should be doing. We should be trying to save money. We should be trying to liberate people. We should be trying to create citizen sovereignty. You should have the right of recall. You should have an elected Senate. You should have an elected governor general. If we're going to keep this federation, we can easily make the governor general's office elective. Wouldn't that be cool? But no, nobody even wants to talk about this stuff, which is why more and more every single day, I don't see the utility of hanging on to this federation. We can still be Canada and do something else. We can still call ourselves, we can be the Republic of Western Canada. If the East doesn't want to go, and they probably don't, we can break off and become the Republic of Western Canada. We could become the Republic of Western Canada with statehood as part of the United States. We have got to do something different, because Canada sucks the way it's designed, by design, and there isn't a single politician that actually wants to do anything about fixing it. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you like the work, this one's long enough, please consider supporting it via the website. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.